Okay, we'll get started again. Okay, so as I say, this is a review. If you're in our fourth year, you'd better know this. If you're in our master's program, you probably know it. If you don't, again, just find out about it. Okay, so what I'm looking for essentially is just that you have some vague picture of what a network is. Okay, vague but technical picture of what a network is. Okay, and you know, it always seems to start with, historically there were two flavors of network, a voice transmission network and a data transmission network. Okay, and because these types of data had very different characteristics. Again, voice was a constant bit rate, but because the ear can sort of compensate for errors, it didn't have to be perfect. Data on the, it was sort of the opposite. It could be sort of delivered any which way in terms of time, but it probably had to get there right. Because of the different characteristics, networks historically were designed in quite different ways. Okay. So you had your telephony network and you had your internet or computer networks. Now they're converging to some extent, but the design still sort of has sort of resonances of those two different types of data that they were built for. Okay. Abstractly, we can think of the networks as providing data transport services. And again, these services can be categorized in a number of ways, connectionless or connection-oriented. So do you sort of build a connection between the end-to-end users? And reliable or unreliable, which seems to have not made it onto the slide. So do you need the data? Will it guarantee the data gets there error-free or not? Okay. Again, our data has moved on from these two basic types to lots of different types. So IP voice, video transmission, etc. And all of these will have slightly different requirements of the network. Typically, these requirements are not explicitly catered for in the network. So these would be the quality of service requirements. And typically, you cannot go to any network and ask for a guarantee on them. It's actually easier to provide those guarantees in voice-based networks because your typical voice system did reserve resources for specific connections. So it was connection-oriented and reliable. So typically it's actually easier to provide quality of service guarantees for that sort of network. But on the other hand, for efficiency reasons, sort of network design is moving away from sort of those sorts of networks, okay, ones where resources are reserved, okay. There are compromises in the sense that a lot of the wireless networks we'll look at will have some protocols for trying to negotiate some quality of service from the network. Okay, and we'll look at that sort of on a case-by-case basis. Okay. Now, typically, again, networks were designed for dealing with different sorts of data, and the way this manifests itself is in the allocation of resources. So the resources are the sharing of links, so multiplexing, and also the sharing of routes through the network, so switching. Okay. And again, two basic flavors exist. Circuit switching, which is providing reserved resources to provide a bit pipe through the network, so it just provides you a connectivity, a sort of a, just a data stream of a certain bandwidth. And packet switching, which typically didn't. Okay, and typically sort of shared links among multiple connections. Okay. So, again, these concepts, sort of different flavors apply, again, to the different types of network implementations. The typical, or the probably only at this point, architecture for packet switching networks is the layered architecture. So again, it seeks to split the problem into sort of more manageable sub-problems, and again, we'll talk about exactly how it does that and what are the key features of that in a minute. And so, again, if this all seems familiar, and I would like sort of it to be sound familiar to everybody and everybody to be confident of these basic concepts, then, you know, again, you might as well leave now. Okay. if not, well, I'm going to say a few words about it and just, and I would strongly recommend that, again, you pick up some basic networks textbook and have a look at it. Tannenbaum and basically all networks textbooks take, again, this layered architecture, and they either work their way down the stack or up the stack, so starting at the physical transmission of bits and working your way up to applications, or starting at applications and working your way down. Computer networks, Tannenbaum and Stalling take the first approach. They go from physical up. Kuros takes the second approach, goes from the application layer down. All of them are quite readable. And again, you don't need to know the gory details, but again, it would be nice to have a good picture of what a network is. Okay. So telephone networks have been around for a long, long time. And again, the goal of a telephony network was to transmit a voice data stream. Initially, that would have been analog, but at some point it was digitized and sampled. And for various reasons, which again are not really critical to this course, you needed 64 kilobit per second bit streams to be transmitted. Okay. And so telephony networks were designed to provide 64 kilobit per second end-to-end connections. Computer data, when it happened, when computers sort of became prevalent, was much different in character. You had some number of bits, who knows, depended, and there was no requirement of regularity in the transmission. Okay. Typically, the first types of applications were not terribly interactive, if at all interactive. And so it didn't matter if it took, you know, a microsecond or 10 minutes for the transmission to occur, or 10 minutes might be a bit long, but a microsecond or, you know, a minute or a second didn't matter. Okay. Now, what this meant was this fixed allocation of resources became fairly expensive, fairly inefficient for transmitting this sort of data. And so the idea was, well, we should have some other different way of allocating resources to transmit the data. Okay. And again, now the types of data have sort of multiplied. They have much different characteristics. Some of them will be, for instance, well, a variable number of bits, but each packet has to be sent at some periodic interval. For instance, if you're streaming a video, the actual size of the frame might differ, but you better keep sending them or you're not going to get a play out. Okay. But the networks still are pretty much designed to handle this or this type of data. And anything else after that has sort of been grafted on as an afterthought. Okay. So, again, if I just said the data, this sort of the types of data is huge now. If you want to find out what the requirements are, the ITUT G1010 gives a very nice summary of types of data and what their quality of service requirements are. Okay, so again, we start out with our telephony networks providing voice channels, and our data networks providing, well, some other type of data transmission. And again, this led to the first characterization of networks, which is how they allocated the resources. So networks could either be circuit switched or packet switched. Okay. So in a circuit switched network, you provided an end-to-end connection, and the resources used for this connection were not shared. They were reserved for the connection. Okay. So, data transfer networks took a different approach. They were packet switched, and this meant that, well, the data was, again, it was broken up into finite portions, so you couldn't have a concept of a data stream now. It would have to be a sequence of packets, and each of those packets had to share the network resources. For efficiency's sake, that sharing was done sort of according to a first-come, first-served basis. So you didn't reserve any resources, but when the packet needed it, if it was available, it was given that resource. And if it wasn't available, the packet had to queue up and wait for the resource. Okay. Now, layered architectures are referring to these packet switch networks. So they're referring to the data has been packaged up into packets, and sort of what do we need, what are the steps we need to transfer that data. Okay. Now, as I think I said this before, but at a very high level, we can just regard networks as providing services, And the most basic categories of service are, you can specify according to reliability, is the data guaranteed to get there or not, and connectivity. Is it connection-oriented? So if users want to sort of persist in a connection, if they want to send more than one packet, do you sort of build a conduit along which all those packets flow, or do you send each packet sort of one at a time? Okay. And so you can sort of, all four combinations of that are possible. You can have reliable connection-oriented, unreliable connection-oriented, reliable connectionless, unreliable connectionless. And again, this would suit different types of data. Okay. So a good example of maybe reliable connection-oriented would be if you want to transmit a large file. You want it to all get there, and you want to actually have a conduit over which all the packets flow so that you don't have to sort of process each packet individually. Okay. As I said, the quality of service is sort of additional requirements that a data connection might need from the network. Typically, again, these are not explicitly catered for in the design of networks. They're at least, not in the sort of basic design of networks. For instance, if you sort of wrote an application, again, just for even the wired network, and tried to sort of negotiate, I need a certain transport service, I need a certain bit rate, you really wouldn't have a mechanism for doing that. Okay. So, on the other hand, it is becoming more important as sort of the different types of applications become more sophisticated and they actually need more resources. Okay. So, if you think just of our very abstract view of the networks, there are, again, the two basic design choices, either circuit switching or packet switching, and we'll have a little look at those. Okay. And as we said before, circuit switching provides an end-to-end connection where the resources are all reserved. Okay. So the main sort of point of delay as far as applications are concerned just comes from setting up this connection. It can take, up to seconds to set up the connection. Once the connection is set up, well, then your resources are guaranteed and, it's great. Okay. Now, in terms of resources, we can we can split the resources into pieces, and the two points of sharing are the switch, so finding a sort of connection in and out of sort of a node, and then any given physical link can potentially have multiple connections going at the same time. And the two most obvious ways to share the resources are you either split the frequency range at which you transmit your signal. So any link is going to have a certain bandwidth. Typically, your signal doesn't need the whole bandwidth, so you split it into pieces. Hopefully that one's first. So Again, here you've just split your bandwidth amongst four users, and so they each get a portion of the bandwidth. In time division multiplexing, we share time. So we define a period of time, and then we split that period into sort of sub-periods, and the users can transmit during their sub-period. Okay. And so again, you can see that the users, you know, if there's an overall rate at which transmission occurs, then the users would get a fraction, in this case a quarter, of that rate. When we look at wireless systems, we look at more complicated ways of splitting our signals, which are done for a number of reasons having to do with, well, getting good performance out of radio signals. Okay. So, again, circuit switching is very good if your end users are, actually need the resources that are being allocated to them. If the end users don't need those resources, then it's very inefficient. Packet switching was proposed as a more efficient alternative to circuit switching, and also one that could be used to transmit computer data. Okay. So data was divided into, again, finite segments, which were then bundled up into packets. So the packets consisted of the data plus some information that you needed to move the data through the network. Okay. Now, when transmitting packets, each packet was assumed to use, when it was being transmitted, would use the full link bandwidth. But since it didn't need it all the time, this bandwidth would be allocated as needed. So again, basically packets queued up and waited for to be transmitted. So, it was assumed that, sort of, again, the traffic is unpredictable. Potentially, the resource requirements could exceed the demand, in which case, again, you had to have mechanisms for allocating the resources. And so, basically, the packets had to be received, processed, and then if the resources weren't available, they had to be stored or queued for later consumption. Or, sorry, not consumption, but for later service. Okay. So what this did was, from the network's point of view, it gave sort of very efficient use of network resources. As long as there was a job to be done, the network could be working away on it. From the user's point of view, or the individual packet's point of view, it introduced delay and sort of, again, performance penalties, in the sense that, well, you have this store and forward, so there's going to be some delay, even if nobody else is using the network at the same time, there's going to be some delay just as the packet has to be processed. And then, as, you know, if there is sort of more demand in the network, then there will also be congestion or queuing delays. Okay. So, again, the underlying assumption is that the packets weren't really that affected by these delays. Potentially also, you know, if there's too much demand at a single point, the queue grows too big, you can also have loss, not just delay. So the assumption was that we'll handle the loss somehow, and the packets or the applications don't mind the delays that we've introduced. And again, that may or may not be true, but that's the assumption. Okay. The term for this sharing of links among multiple packets is statistical multiplexing. And so, again, it means that any packet coming along sort of is served as soon as the resource is available. And if sharing happens, then this happens through some sort of queue mechanism. Okay. So, again, just the way this is set up, and again, the way the networks are designed, and the way packets are designed, since you don't necessarily have a connection, you need to process the packet, you need to decide where it's going, and so you have what's called a store and forward system, where at each step along the way, at each node, the packet is fully received and processed before it's forwarded on. Again, that means that even if there's no one else using the network, you've introduced some sort of delay. Okay. Again, sort of intuitively, it's clear that you're able to sort of more efficiently use the network resources, and you can show that, again, if the users are not demanding constant service, then you can provide for more users using statistical multiplexing than you can with circuit switching and reservation of resources. Okay. So which one do we choose? Well, again, it was clear, sort of historically, it was clear what you wanted to do. If you had voice connections, you wanted a circuit switch network. If you had computer traffic, you wanted a packet switch network. Now, again, they each have their drawbacks. Circuit switch networks have, to create the circuits, there's a setup time. Again, we've gone through their various delays in packet networks as well. Okay. But for our initial types of traffic, it was clear what worked better. Okay. Again, for modern data applications, video streaming, etc., it's actually not as clear sort of what would be a good paradigm. The data can, video streaming, for instance, presents a much more constant data rate, not 100% constant, but it also has a requirement of regularity. So it's somewhere betwixt in between. Okay. So typically, again, how do we provide for these sorts of data? Well, if you're in the wired network, basically you just lay on more resources until the problem goes away. If you're in the wireless network, you don't really have that option. And potentially, there are protocols, again, to negotiate quality of service, if not guarantees, then at least support in wireless networks. Okay. So we said that packet switch networks adhered to a layered architecture, and this layering was just a way of handling complexity that happened to work quite well. It was really quite clever. Again, you could arguably, you know, it had its first example in the telephony network, in the sense that, you know, telephone networks, well, traditionally, again, would, you know, you'd have the same issues. You'd have a sort of physical transmission of signals. Since you sort of don't have a wire connecting any two points, you would have to go through switches, transit points. You would have to sort of deal with sort of end-to-end connectivity then. Those are some of the typical issues that you deal with packet networks. But again, the layered architecture is going to refer very specifically to packets, okay, and packet networks. Okay, and it's provided a quite elegant way of dealing with sort of very complex problems. Okay, so what are the basic ideas of layered architectures? Well, there's the layers represent services that can be sort of accessed at any node, so any endpoints are potentially sort of in the middle. Okay. Now, these services sort of assume that they have a corresponding service at the other end. And so that's what's called virtual communication, because they don't actually physically communicate with the other end. And the services are provided for the neighboring layers, and specifically lower layers provide services for higher layers. Okay. So in this example, we have airplane routing, which can also be organized in this way. And so we've defined a number of services. We have to purchase a ticket. Then once our ticket's purchased, we can check our baggage. Once our baggage is checked, we can go to the gate and get onto the plane. Once we do that, the plane can take off, and it has to be routed. Okay, and then at some point you do have physical transport, and then at the other end you sort of work your way down. You have to be routed into the airport or up the layers. You have to land, get to the gate, collect your baggage, and then go complain as the baggage has been either lost or destroyed. Okay. So you can see how, again, you move through these layers in order to sort of obtain your transport. Again, the layers also sort of assume that sort of there's correspondent components on either end. So if you go to the ticket desk and complain, well, you'd better have purchased a ticket. So that and the information that you got when you purchased the ticket will be required for the complaints. The baggage check will contain information about whose baggage it is and, again, allow you to claim it at the other end, etc. Okay. So, again, what this has done is it's sort of compartmentalized the problem, and so you have very specific services that need to be implemented, and then you have an interface between the services, so you can assume that the asserted information is passed on at each point. Now, okay. So, again, you can change how exactly you implement this service as long as you retain sort of the information that has to be communicated. Packet networks are designed on pretty much the same principle. You have layers. Each layer performs very well-defined tasks, and each layer then sort of communicates very specific information to its neighboring layers, and also has a very specific interaction with with its corresponding layer on an adjoining or end-to-end link. Okay. Typically, it's argued that a 5-layer structure is reasonable, although, again, if you've taken networks, you know that the link layer typically gets subdivided into more sublayers as well. Okay. So the bottom layer is the physical transport of data. Okay, so this is where the actual information is moved from one physical location to another. The link layer then sort of manages the information that's transmitted. Okay, so recognizes a packet structure and potentially ensures that the packet is correctly received. And so both of those deal with a point-to-point connection. On top of that, obviously, you need to go through multiple points. Nobody has a wire strung from, their phone to another phone. They have to go through switches. And so the network layer manages the transit of data through multiple points. Okay. And again, that all sort of moves packets sort of individually through the network. The application and transport layer are designed to sort of, again, make end-to-end communication sort of more easy. And so the transport layer handles process-to-process connections. So instead of just thinking of individual packets moving through, you can think of streams of packets moving through and getting sort of, again, to specific processes, not just to a physical location, but to a specific program instead. And applications are the distributed programs that would run over the network. Okay. So that's pretty much what TCP/IP would do. Although, again, arguably TCP/IP actually leaves the physical and link layer to individual networks to decide. It starts more at the IP layer, so it starts here and moves up. Okay. There are sort of alternative models. The most common one would be the OSI model, which looks a lot like the TCP/IP model, but has this presentation and session layer as well. And pretty much nobody would actually use those two layers. Nothing's ever been implemented for those two layers. If you need the services, they're in those two layers, then you, those are just implemented at the application layer.
Okay. TCP/IP is the dominant architecture. It's what's implemented. And again, that means that your network addressing uses IP addresses, and you use one of the very specific transport protocols, typically either TCP or UDP, and again, those can be accessed via sockets by the applications. Okay, so why mention OSI? And again, for the purposes of this module, it doesn't really matter, but it was actually, it is more of a model, and it was the first place where these concepts of services, interfaces, and protocols were sort of articulated and made clear, but more so than in TCP/IP, which sort of adheres to them, but that it was more of an implementation, and this is, again, more of a model. Whenever anybody talks about networks, they will talk about layers. So they'll talk about application transport network link or physical layers. Okay. Even if you get telephony networks, they're often trying to graft what they're doing onto this layered model as well. So it's, you know, worth, again, getting straight in your head exactly what the layered model does. I'm sure most of you, again, are very familiar with this, and this is not an issue. Okay, so how does data move through exactly? Well, again, you've got this idea of data encapsulation, which means that at any layer, the lower layers are not concerned with the information contained in the data, but rather just sort of add their own information on to communicate with their opposite numbers through the network. So we start out with a message, or, you know, again, a chunk of data, and this is passed down to from the application layer to the transport layer. The transport layer adds a header, and that's to communicate with its opposite number at the destination. And so that's so that whatever functionality, again, whatever connectivity we need can be implemented. That the whole thing then moves down to the network layer. The network layer views that whole thing just as a chunk of data. And it adds its own header, and that's to communicate with other nodes in the link. And again, that's passed down to the link layer, so in preparation for transmission across the link layer will add a header. And then finally, that gets physically transmitted. Okay. It sticks there for some reason. Okay, now, when you go through any intermediate node, well, you travel through, again, you'll use the services of a number of layers at the intermediate stage, and then at each point you pass up through the stack, and at each point the layer examines its corresponding header. So the link layer is going to examine the header, does whatever processing it needs, passes the data up. The next layer here, the network layer, it's not working, will examine its header, move it down, and move it back up. Okay. And so again, the idea of encapsulation is this idea that each layer is not concerned with the actual meaning of the data, except the application layer, but instead just views it as a series of bits
and adds its own information, which is the only thing it will examine. Now, again, if you have a cross-layer implementation, then potentially these layers are examining sort of multiple portions of the header and trying to make sense of them. Okay, but initially, again, that was not considered a good idea. Again, this makes implementation quite, relatively straightforward in the sense that each layer is concerned with only a finite amount of information and a finite number of tasks. Okay, so what do we care about for these layers? Well, we'll spend a good bit of time on the physical layer, looking at signaling and bit encoding, because again, this is the characteristics of data transport for wireless systems are what drive a lot of what goes on. Okay. In terms of the data link layer, well, again, for any type of network, the main functionality is sort of to ensure correct transmission of packets and potentially also to share the medium. Okay. And again, even, well, say in an Ethernet network, a wired network, there are times when multiple computers will share the same medium, and the data link layer will provide protocols to allow that to happen. Okay. The bulk of the examples of data link layer protocols come from the IEEE 802 family, so this specifies pretty much any type of local area network you want, and sort of lots of technologies as well. So 802.16 WiMAX, 802.11 Wi-Fi are part of that family. Okay, and why? Because again, they're concerned with point-to-point connectivity. And so the issues that we're going to examine are basically have to do with sharing the medium. Okay, and so in your telephony networks, you still have to share this medium. So we'll look at sort of how channel allocation is done, how radio frequencies are allocated. And in packet switch networks, again, you've got the MAC layer, which will regulate how packets are transmitted through the medium. And again, this is where a lot of the quality of service support occurs, because again, it's what allows you to assign resources. Okay, so again, the primary responsibility of the network layer is routing, and we're not going to consider a lot of routing in this module. Again, if you had ad hoc networks where, again, you're considering people moving, you know, nodes moving and still wanting to maintain some sort of network connectivity, then there are a lot of sort of pathological issues to defining good protocols for that, but we're not going to really concentrate on that. Most of the networks we're going to look at, again, provide wireless access to a wired core. Okay. There are protocols, particularly addressing protocols, to sort of make things easier. Mobile IP provides a way of addressing, so a device can have a single IP address even as it's moving through multiple network coverage. So again, if you think about the typical way IP is assigned, it's the assignment is tied to the network you're connected to. So if you're changing networks, there's an issue about getting your IP right. But again, I probably won't go into that in any detail.
We won't look a lot at transport either. It does play a role in quality of service, and again, for wireless networks, that can be even more critical. And we definitely won't look at the applications. Okay, so, you know, what you take from that is that we're staying pretty low in the protocol stack and looking, again, at those issues with which, you know, sort of physical to network layer, which have to do with the actual implementation of networks. Okay. Okay, so that's all.